Okay. Dave.
Presumably you must be familiar with our general position. Our vision. Yeah. Or maybe you're not.
No, I should have revised it more before I came. I'm not much of a reading kind of a person. I'm more of a talking to people kind of a person. So.
Well, I was going to ask you about what your criticism of our position was, but I mean, this reflects actually. I hadn't really anticipated this position, but this actually reflects quite badly on you.
Do you want me to
looking at a scope of various ideas, because we're obviously interested. In you and what you've just
said. Yeah, and I am interested very much.
You have no idea what we stand for. People have been asking questions, we've got no idea what we're actually interested in.
I'm not sure I've got no idea.
You know you're interested in the moneyless ways of society.
I've spoken quite a lot to Darren Point, but to a certain extent, it's very hard to know when you've got the full picture of what an organisation is about and to be honest, even for certain... What do I think you're... What do you think you're about?
this is interesting. I want to know what you think we stand for, because that will be interesting in itself, and nobody helped
it. nobody helped. I don't know, is that actually the most useful thing for me to do, to tell you what you're about?
You've turned up and you're giving a talk to an organisation and you have absolutely no idea.
I'm certainly willing to answer any question about what I personally believe and what I think people...
We are fairly unique in a position that we hold about things, and not only are we fairly unique, we stick to a tradition that goes back 100 years. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. It's quite easily identifiable, but
That would be in contrast to other groups that I also don't necessarily know all the details about what they think and the subtleties. Because it's interesting. One way or another, something will be learned, hopefully. My understanding is that when you want a moneyless society, and to be perfectly honest, I can kind of see that far. I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with moneyless society, but I can certainly see that. Also, no private property at all is the impression I get. Obviously, there's kind of personal effects versus means of production, and to me, a ladder, while it's not a personal effects, a ladder for a window cleaner. It is not the same magnitude of capital as say, vast tracts of land or bodies. It's the same thing in essence. It allows him to carry out his job. It needs to be made before he can get any useful use out of it. And my understanding, from speaking to Darren, is that the SPGB are against any form of private ownership of the means of production. Is that right?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in that case, what I'd like to know is exactly how is the means of production in control? Because obviously at the moment what we've got, and there are a lot of problems with it, is a society where we've got the means of production in control by a minority, and it's controlled through means of ownership. Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So say you've got something that you need to decide how it's applied. A widget making machine, what kind of widgets is it going to make? Who, how, or what makes that decision?
So you're asking me?
I'm asking anyone who wants to. Andy wants to.
Brief answers, because I say we've got a backlog of speakers, so if we could have brief answers as possible. So if someone wants to give a very brief answer to Ian's question, then we'll move on to the rest
of
the
people. So he asked me a question.
Well, whoever wants to give a brief answer.
Okay.
Go on then, Peter.
Click somebody.
Oh, I said Peter.
And one thing I think here is that when we're discussing these sort of things, we've got to think about the nature of the system that we live in. It's a contractual system. I think it can look quite fair. You say to somebody, once you take a wash of windows and a cup of grass and so on, and you can come to some sort of deal. And a lot is love. In that sort of relationship. Some folk in that bus will sort of haggle about things, they're buying every day apparently, whereas we go into shops and a lot of things are pretty regularly. But there's this, in the society that we live in, we have this sort of idea that you got a contract and it's fair in the sense that, well, you've agreed to it. The trade union falls out with wages or something like that, you have a strike or a lot of negotiation and they come to a deal. You know, and there's this particular element in a capitalist society. And lots of workers, obviously, because that's what the rest is, we're all being born into this society. We're surrounded with capitalism, and it's got us pretty well into the system now. And the trouble is, we see as a social society, we see that there's something wrong with this society because it's not a fair deal. Because we must have wages, we must have money, and that's your problem.
Yeah, so it's an agreement from a...
anybody, whether in your room or in her, you must have the money. And it gives a tremendous power to a group of people, only at night there. Somebody says to me, why do you work here? I say, well, I always resented the idea that a guy could say to me, if you don't do it, you know what you do. And you're going to be left, you need money, you've only got the family and the rest of you. Responsibilities, may have a house to pay. There's all types of things that you as a worker, then you know you've got to buckle down and get on with that particular part of the job. Now that's what we want to get rid of. We've got to get rid of that system. And of course, you made the point that sometimes the press can be good to you or bad to you. Somebody raised the question of what's starving. Well, only about a fortnight ago or something like that, I was told in the paper or the TV or something that the people in America, all these folk are eating that much, we could feed 1 million people if they would just eat right. 1 billion people, no, not 1 million people. Now, it didn't go any further than that, but I think, well, you can see what they're saying there. These folk are starving because these ones are eating too much. Now, it's an absolute lie, because quite obviously, these folk are starving because they've got the money to buy the food. And how could you solve it? You've got to starve these Americans. And when you try to take the food, to say, well, give them less money, for instance. Like,
okay, Pete.
If you give them less money, then they wouldn't be able to buy the food and you could transfer it. You can't do that in a capitalist system. It's got to be sold.
Okay, I prefer a sort of brief contribution just so we can allow everyone to speak. Danny was next.
Yeah. Ian, how do you feel about freedom?
Well, obviously, to a certain extent, one person's freedom can impinge on another person's freedom. But in general, obviously, freedom tends to be a good thing.
You think, yeah. Okay. So you're not exactly sort of at a thing about what it actually means.
Well, the ability to enact your own your will is normally how I'd define freedom.
Well, yeah, I've got a more practical definition of freedom. Let's have a look at it from like the worker's point of view. That's somebody who owns no means of production and is forced by the threat of poverty go to the labour market and sell theirself on the labour market to an employer. Okay? Now, if you look at the word employ in the dictionary, it means to use, to exploit, to take advantage of. Agreed?
I'll take your word.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, there's dictionaries out there that will confirm that. So, therefore, what you do when you go on the labour market, you sell yourself for a wage, a salary, or a fee. So, you, therefore, can meet the price of buying a life. Now, you see, the thing about this is that in a socialist society, we'll freely bring about social creativity and freely take from social production. And that means we'll be living a life without price. And anything with a price cannot be free. So a life without price, in the practical sense, is freedom. Where we work where we take on occupation, social creativity, that we decide that needs to do, stuff that we decide is worthwhile. Where we can freely decide how much time we're going to give to this, or to whatever endeavour it takes. Now, you talked about exploitation, and you said that there will always be exploitation of man, that's what I assume, of human over human. Well, you see, what the thing about capitalism and what makes it, what allows it to exist, is we live in a society that's yet to come of age, yet to work itself out, and has yet to discover. And the people in society have yet to discover their common identity. And we all have one. I mean, Because, you know, if you take genetics, paleoarchaeology tells us that, you know, 120,000 years ago there was a woman, they refer to as mitochondrial Eve, she's the greatest of all great-grandmothers. There's also a chap called Chromosomal Adam, 60,000 years ago, supposed to be the greatest of all great-grandfather. We can all trace our roots back to them. So, in a sense, we're a family. So that's our common identity. Now, the great thing about human beings living in a society that's come of age, we recognise that common identity. And the amazing thing about this is that you cannot exploit, oppress, coerce, or abuse in any way those people that you identify with. All you can do with people that you identify with is cooperate. So I don't see that exploitation is something that's eternal. The computer can't be dispensed with it in a human society. And as I say, the only reason it exists today is because we live in a world where we have all sorts of ridiculous, spurious identities. I mean, the great one is the nation state. You know, we'd say, I was proud to be British. I mean, nobody chooses where they're born. Nobody chooses their time, their politics, the education, culture, the tradition. You know, they don't even choose their parents. So this is the grand case of mistaken identity, you know, skin colour, sexuality, you know, all this kind of stuff. All spurious identities in a sense. Because they don't recognise what it is to be human. And as I say, you know, in all societies are social relationships. So therefore, the more we know about what we're relating with, the more we know about who we're relating to, the more functional, the more human that society will be. It's like the more you know about what it is to be a builder, or a nurse, or an engineer, or whatever, the more of a builder, nurse, and engineer you can be. So therefore, the more you know about what it is to be human, the more of a human you can be. I mean, anybody here ever had a formal lesson on what it is to be human? None of us. I mean, being human is amazing. And absolutely, what a stroke of luck to inhabit a situation where you have consciousness, where you have talent, where you have creativity. Absolutely stunning. But you don't get lessons in school about what it is to be human. What you get in school is you get conditioning, training, programming to be an employee. You are fitting up for a life as a servant. And of course, I mean, this is contrary to our real identity. So what happens is we've got these square-faced human beings, multifaceted, all being crammed in around holes, and it's painful. So therefore, you have this case of mistaken identity compounded by the situation we have to live in. So that's why we have to be something other than who we are. So we suffer from stress, depression, neurosis, schizophrenia, OCD, all these kinds of things, which are a reaction to living a life where we can't be true to ourselves.
Okay.
I think we need to answer the question.
Hang on a second. I did ask for brief contributions, but Ian, would you like to come back on what Dan has said?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do live in a society that tries to use the worst side of human nature to control people into often doing good things. Or at least aspects of it are certainly good. And yes, it would be possible to have a major change. So the better side of human nature does take precedence, and that we live in a dramatically different world where exploitation is a tiny thing. It's absolute. I have a great problem with any absolute. If you see what I mean. Because reality just is never like that. You never get to a perfect society with no exploitation. But you can make a vast leap of change in it. Do you think it's actually possible to have a society?
If you're asking me, you have a system that's
very brief, Danny, please.
Okay. You have a system of society where you have free labour, free social creativity, where people take freely from the common store, where you don't have a system of like a wages system, mm-hmm. where you can actually threaten people with poverty to get them to live their lives for you.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what's stopping this coming about?
I don't want too much of a conversation. There are a few more people who want to speak. So I don't know if Ian, if you want to sort of round up one more. Yourself and Danny, yourself.
Yeah, I'm just interested about what's stopping it coming about.
Consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness.
Understanding, awareness of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. John wanted to speak.
I feel a bit uncomfortable about the level of criticism that's been levelled at the Occupy movement. I think it's been very vitriolic, actually. And I feel it's been too dismissive. Now, the Occupy movement, you see, who's to say? Who said, you know, how can you tell the effect of the French Revolution? What the impact's going to be? All I know is that, as opposed to the Socialist Party or anyone else, the Occupy movement has at least created a platform for people to discuss these issues. And the Socialist Party has been in some of those meetings in London, I know, because I've spoken to people, and it's influenced a lot of people. A lot of young people have been totally disenfranchised and not interested in politics. And I think that is a great achievement. Of course, it hasn't got all the answers, but at least it's kick-started the debate and has the potential to raise consciousness. Now, if that was easy, the Socialist Party would have made greater advances, you know. Yes. So I think that has got to be acknowledged. The other thing I feel, this golf analogy is all very well, it's both simplistic. Nobody gets a hole in one. We all go over a bloody place, and I might be stuck in some kind of peripheral organisation, but I have got a chance to chip out of the bunker and eventually get to the object. So I think this is a simplistic one-way system. Let us all try and develop a thing, and congratulations to the Occupy movement. That's what I would say.
Trevor. Yeah, I mean that is actually where I was going. I mean, it may be that Trevor does know exactly where the hole is. It may be the case.
We believe we do.
No, Trevor, okay, but let's finish.
It may be the case, but the thing is, everybody, or at least half the population, needs to know. Yeah. So, to be honest, the world is bloody complicated. It seems unlikely that anyone or any group has all of the answers. But what we've got a bit of the answers. Everyone's got, well, not everyone's got a bit of the answers, but the answers are out there. It's a question. It's a question. It's a question of sharing them broadly enough and reaching enough agreement in a wide enough area of society. Do we agree on that?
That's why we need science. Mark, look, there's been a whole history of mankind trying to understand our social position. It's old, it goes back ever since we left our tribes.
Okay, Stairs, do you want to come back on what John said about the golfing analogy at all?
I'd say some of us might have been there, do you know what I mean? Stop war, but I mean, if you don't understand the social system that creates it, then you need to get out of there and be going there, you know, or going there. Yeah. You know, various people would have been into these things, but you still need a direct route once you've you know, gone into that territory. What Ian's saying comes across as very postmodern to me. It's like, Can we understand, can we really ever understand society? Or are we able to create perfection? Let's sort of debate that till the cows come home, shall we? And never make a decision. Well, I mean, I would say we're not, you know, the socialism, the vision that we have for socialism is not dependent on, you know, perfect human beings. That needs to be clear. You know, what the Socialist Party is suggesting is a framework of a society which is run on democratic principles. So that, you know, the so-called nasty side of human nature, which we don't call human nature, we call it human behaviour, but the so-called nasty side of things isn't able to perpetuate itself, because there would be a check-in process in the fact that there won't be hierarchies, for one person to dominate others. There's no domination happening. And there's no, it's just there's accountability. And there would be, you know, there would have to be, I guess, check-in procedures to forestall any antisocial action and stuff. So it's not, you know, we're not after perfect. And to think, shall we pontificate whether that society is going to be a perfect society? Well, no, there might be some axe murderer in that society. But would we be better to deal with that person in a socialist society, or the way this society, you know, is structured, that creates far more axe murderers than that kind of society would ever do?
Any contributions from anyone who hasn't already spoken? So if... I think Ray had his hand up a split second before Jacqueline, so Ray and then Jacqueline.
Just to echo with this gentleman was saying, I'm very glad that the Occupy phenomenon happens. I think it's actually still happening. I don't think it's bubbled away. I think it's still bubbling under. I mean, is anybody in here getting an ounce of charity for Occupy? I mean, for fuck's sake, give them a bit of slack. I mean, what they've achieved is...
What was expected, would
leaderless movement, right? Okay, they've got no out... Literally no idea about the get through this society to the next. They're not even discussing that. They're coming from a multiplicity of different areas. But the one thing that I would say that they've achieved is just this one slogan, this 99% versus 1% thing. And I think that's as much as they can achieve. But at least, it, for me, it's a tiny flicker of hope. And that's it. It's probably going to go by the wayside, and then it'll evolve into something else, because this is part... I see it as part of the evolution and an index of where our class is going. But to attack it in this kind of sublimated kind of chauvinism that I've heard today, it just really disappoints me. I know that they can never, they don't really have any clue of how to get, I don't know, even thinking about how to get to the next society, but for fuck's sake, give them some slack. They've achieved something at least.
You mean agree with
Trevor, please.
You
yeah.
You were saying agree with
Trevor, do you want to go back on what he said?
I'm not saying that.
We can have discussions sort of after the session's finished, but yeah, if we could go in the right order. So, Stair.
Yeah, Ray, you seem to think that there's no ounce of charity appreciation of what the Occupy movement has achieved. Well, I think earlier on I did say that, you know, that the Occupy movement have been part of a space which has allowed people to have conversation. And also, I've also said that, you know, another positive thing that seems to have come out of Occupy Norwich is this, these meetings that we're having called Visions for Change. And I would also go as far as to say that, I'm sure there'll be a continuing a dialogue with, between members of the Socialist Party and people in Occupy Norwich and Occupy anywhere. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I can't see myself and Ian, after this meeting, being loggerheads or anything, I'm sure we'll have a nice, exchange. So it's not like some sort of polarised hostility on the sort of exchange of ideas point of view. So it's not like if you have a different opinion, then it's important to state it. But that doesn't mean you're being derogatory to the person who's expressing that different opinion.
Ian, do you want to?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for, I can't remember, thank you for what you said, because that's right. In a sense, at Occupy Norwich, we did try to move on to potential solutions to some of the problems that we felt we'd identified. But in a sense, what we weren't trying to do was a small group agree on something. It was about trying to get the whole of society to agree on something or recognise something, and to an extent that there's something wrong with capitalism, I think is well recognised in society now. To you guys, that may seem like a tiny start, but it's progress.
Okay, Jacqueline.
Yes, first of all, thank you for coming here to talk. I did enjoy your talk. I was looking forward to this, both yourself and Stair. I don't feel that you've been attacked, to be honest. So I won't be my usual self. I did attend a couple of Occupy movement sites in London. I mean, I went twice to one in London, the big one that was on the telly, St. Paul's and all that, and found most of them were currency cranks that people milling about, not the Occupy movement itself. But I spoke to someone who was a member of the Occupy movement itself, And I asked him, you know, what is all this? What's it about, you lefty? What are you going on with? And he very kindly said to me that it's a space for people to come and share their views and to find out what we can do about capitalism, blah, blah, blah. But for other, you know, for the rest of the people, not for you to tell them how it's to be, but for them to come and share with yourselves, or myself to come and share with you. Now, that was all very fine. There was just so few of you I found there, that sort of thing. My main thing was, did you get any people coming along who tried to put a block or anything on what you were trying to do, other groups, if you know what I mean, without mentioning names?
Like the Socialist Workers Party. yeah, I won't mention it. I don't want to tar everyone from the Socialist Workers Party with the same brush because, like yourselves, I don't know as much as I should about them. But there were certainly people from that organisation who were on the more controlling side, shall we say. Mm-hmm. But there were also some people from that organisation who had... Yeah, but both open and also had some of the most insightful things to say. I think they have more problem at London, where I think the Socialist Workers Party is a big thing out of the whole frontage of Occupy St Paul's or LSX, which kind of made it look like it was all just a Socialist Workers Party gathering, and there was some objection to it. It's kind of the old thing that the division is too much of a problem with, for want of a better phrase, organisations on the left. I know it's a cliche, but yeah. But I don't really want to be promoting that. Rather, finding the good in the Socialist Workers Party, which there is some.
Any contributions from anyone who hasn't already spoken? No, okay. Andy and then Danny afterwards.
All I would say to you, young man, and I'll take my cap off, and I've got grey hair, which is receding and thinning, is don't be taken in by the Trotskyists. They will infiltrate you, whatever you try to do.
I've not met any yet.
Okay, we don't do that. You are open to come into us to discuss, okay? What you will find is with the Socialist Workers' Party, they used to be called the International Socialists, then there's the Revolutionary Communist Party, or Spikes, and all of those people. They will all try to talk to you. Be careful, okay? As you traverse through your political life, you will find out, okay? And I'm not, you know, you're a very, very intelligent guy, so I'm not telling you what to do. I can tell you that, okay? And that's why I ended up in the Socialist Party of Great Britain, because this is a party which is totally open, okay? We talk to each other, we learn from our mistakes, and we are humble, actually, with a small party of good boys.
Okay, should we sort of aim to finish round about five-ish? Because I'd like to give Ian and Stair the opportunity to wind up as well. I mean, if the consensus is to carry on after five, then we'll go with that. But should you aim for... round up and about, you know, finish about five, does that seem okay? Danny, who's next to...
Yeah, I mean, just to sort of add a bit of balance, I have to say that when the Occupy movement started up, you know, in America and Britain and around the world, a general consensus in the party was that it was really encouraging. It was amazing. Mm. Okay? It was all a huge lift. I and others were attended the St Paul's Occupy over several weeks, you know, to get their Sundays and, you know, the leaflet, you know, hand out leaflets we had literature to store. We finally spoke to, you know, members of the public, but we got involved in talking to actually, you know, the occupiers. One disappointing thing was that we had this video called Cap and Some Other Kid Stuff, and I was chatting to one of the guys who dealt with, you know, with that, you know, putting on films or whatever, because they had a projector. He was all for it, and he was going to put it forward, but we heard nothing about that. But we did, because they had the Tent University, and we did, like, email them, and I spoke to people who were involved in organising that, and we did send in several emails to see if we could, if we were given the opportunity to give a talk. But nothing came of that. But, yeah, I think it's... You know, I mean, capitalism produces, you know, there's a saying, like Marx said, that capitalism produces its own grave diggers. And the Occupy movement is an example of that. And you know, I think, you know, it's young and it needs, you know, it'll sort itself out and hopefully come to the right conclusions. But yeah, great events, you know, wonderfully encouraging.
I don't think the Occupy movement in and of itself will come to conclusions so much, but people within it will come to conclusions, and people influenced by it will change it.
Okay. Other contribution? Dave?
Yeah, it's probably a bit...
No interrogations, please.
It's probably a bit of a controversial issue, but I think when you look at the Occupy movement, there's like a positive viewpoint from Guardian readers and stuff like that. When you actually talk to, you know, what about extraction ordinary members of the working class, they have like a perception of it as another middle class hippie movement, which isn't particularly helped by things some of the people who become the spokespersons.
Do you want to talk a bit middle class and hippie? Just a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of like, you know, I just got manufacturing, and I've talked to people about it that's the way they view it. They have some actually quite a bit of sympathy with it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But they're obviously a bit disorientated by people with sort of like studs in their noses and stuff like that. That's what these people are like, these working class people.
What, the ordinary members of the working class have the studs in their noses?
Well, there are, but most of them don't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, well, one of the things I did like about it was the
diversity.
I mean, I don't know if you recognise that cultural difference. Like, you know, there is this people with... I've not got a problem with people with long hair, funny beards and stuff like that, tattoos and stuff.
Okay, Dave, do you want to let Ian respond to that?
The point is that a large majority of people, ordinary working class, don't get engaged in that kind of thing, and they... feels that those kind of people are somehow culturally different and, you know, weird sort of...
Okay, yeah. Ian, do you want to...
Yeah, well, if he's finished. Somebody who's working in a factory, 9 to 5, they wouldn't have time to do it. So, yeah, to a certain extent, some of the people, in a sense, it was a privilege that allowed me... To be able to be there and do that. But, well, I don't really apologise for that. Sorry, I can't remember what the other points you made were. You don't like my beard. I could shave it off, I suppose.
The vast majority of ordinary people perceive the Occupy Wall Street Occupy movement
as a bit
like some another... strange hippie which was the same attitude that the ordinary factory workers had to the, you know, the firepower movement.
Mm-hmm.
There was a dislocation between the two.
Yeah, one of the good
things. Obviously, there's quite a lot of people.
Dave, do you want to let him finish?
There was obviously quite a lot of people.
Sorry,
it's all right.
Sure, he's had another chance.
It's all right. I'm
right.
I'm done.
Right, okay, any other contributions, Ed?
Yeah, you spoke briefly about the problem of the homeless and that they caused the problem of the movement. You're the only, I've only spoke to one other occupier, it's my cousin in Dublin, who's very involved with that occupy. And funny enough, he raised the same problem. I kind of brushed his off as just a bit of snobbery because I know my cousin. But I was wondering what your reasons were.
Yeah, it's a good point. And in a sense, it's kind of the symptoms of the problem making it harder for us to solve it. There were certainly people who were homeless, i.e. they didn't have a home, but kind of had shelters to sleep in, etc., who chose to be there. There's obviously nothing about being homeless that makes them unqualified to protest. Far from it, it's exactly the opposite. But you do get people on the streets who have drug and drink problems, who you just have no control over their own lives. They have very little they can bring to a protest, but they also have a lot of needs. They quite frankly make a load of mess. Yeah, and that was a big problem because we ended up clearing out the mess of lots of kids and lots of drunken, stoned homeless people, which was hard.
Okay, maybe one more contribution before the speakers wind up. Vince?
Yes, I think some of the main important issues that the Occupy movement are trying to address are the environment, inequality, and war. There was a fourth one coming about that. But environment, inequality, and war, and exploitation. Now, we've explained that capitalism is a society of private ownership in which the world's resources are monopolised by a small minority of the world's population. What we are proposing is common ownership of the world's resources, which they are owned by everybody. Now, obviously, this is a fundamental change. I think this is the we in the World Socialist Movement believe that this is the only way in which these issues are of concern to the Occupy movement and of concern to us. We believe that this is the only way that those issues can maybe not be perfectly solved, but fundamentally solved to make a tolerable, humane type of society. Not without any problems, but with many fewer problems than we have now. And the problems that will remain will be largely solvable to a tolerable extent.
Right, if the two speakers would wind up, I don't know, sort of maximum 5 minutes each, less is okay, but up to 5 minutes. Ed, did you want
to... I've said enough, really, but I think I'd just leave it by encouraging anyone involved with the Occupy movement or sympathetic... to ask themselves questions, think about what you believe and why. So that's what instead of endlessly talking amongst yourselves, have a bit of deep thought and understand the ideas in your own head, and because otherwise the conversation will be pretty meaningless. Look at history and the structure of society and how challenges to it can easily get co-opted.
Well, I'd second everything that Stair said for both people in the Occupy movement and people in the SPGP. And thank you very much for inviting me to be here today. I've enjoyed it. I hope it's at least been of some interest.
Right, well, good. Thank you very much for a very...